The fertile soil of Oregon's Willamette Valley was stolen from Montana, Idaho, and Washington. Not stolen exactly, but that's where Oregon's Jori soil originated. Geologists point to a massive flood about 12,000 years ago and a proglacial body of water that once held as much water as Great Lakes Erie and Ontario combined. Until it didn't. A series of ice dam failures caused torrential flooding through land we call Idaho and eastern Washington, a force equivalent to 60 Amazon rivers racing through Oregon's Columbia Gorge to the Pacific Ocean. All that water deposited topsoil in this lush valley where 75% of all Oregonians now live. If you're from Walla Walla, Spokane, or Coeur d'Alene, thank you for your exquisite dirt. Today, Willamette Valley farmers grow berries, hazelnuts, vegetables, Christmas trees, and grapes, most notably Pinot Noir grapes. As of 2024, the valley is home to 1,016 vineyards, many of which have tasting rooms with panoramic views of the valley and surrounding mountains, the Cascade Range to the east, and the Coast Range to the west. One of us is a wine drinker, and the other is not, but we both like sitting in Adirondack chairs at local vineyards, enjoying leisurely talk and stunning vistas. Gratitude wafts in on the breezes, and whispers of grace ease into our conversation and silence as we settle into a quiet, slow afternoon. When one of our favorite vineyards offered a Valentine's Day event, we purchased tickets and eagerly put the event in our shared iCalendar. It didn't turn out to be the romantic evening we envisioned. Chilly rain characterizes Oregon Februarys, so a too large crowd assembled inside a too small tasting room. Our dream of a quiet, romantic dinner for two faded as we were ushered to a big table populated by a boisterous group of friends gathering for a reunion. The conversation at the table seemed pleasant enough, but with each course of the meal came another wine pairing and liberal fill-ups in between. If alcohol is a social lubricant in small doses, it is a verbal laxative in large ones. Lisa had a glass with the first course, and Mark a glass of water. Sometime later, Lisa had a second glass to soften her agitation at the mounting noise in the room. Mark, as the abstainer, had all his mental capacities intact to observe the escalating volume and rambunctiousness of the crowd. We gave up trying to talk because we couldn't hear one another anyway, nor could we hear the jazz pianist and vocalist attempting to sing love songs over the din. A memorable Valentine's Day, for sure, though not one we'd recommend. Sometimes, sitting around a table with a group of others, music playing in the background is a gift of rich, meaningful conversation. But at other times, such as this Valentine's Day brimming with too much wine, some people retreat into passive isolation, while others dominate with careless words in a steady crescendo. Does it sometimes seem that our 21st century Western culture caters to those who speak soonest and loudest? Pause. Also imagine the noise, sensations, and feelings that bounce around inside your head when you are entangled in an anxious, fearful, angry, regretful, and very loud conversation with yourself. Being slow to speak challenges both our external and internal worlds. Sometimes we need to accept an invitation to quiet the inner loudness every bit as much as the outer. Christianity is countercultural and calls us to walk to a different cadence than what we observe around us. How can we be slow to speak in a fast-to-speak world? And how can we quiet the chattering inside our own heads?